Good evening. We have a good crowd here tonight. Thankful for your presence. And as always, our hope and prayer is that we can all gain something from the lesson tonight. I guess preparing for this, I was trying to figure out how to express this, at least in a little bit of a different way. By the way, it seemed to work a little better tonight. I tried two different things, so now I don't know which one may have been the one that worked, but hopefully I can continue just doing those two things, and maybe the screen will keep, we'll cross our fingers. I'm not going to say that it's solved yet, but it did work out better. But in studying for this, as it's come up several different times in conversation over the past few months, and so I thought it would be good to touch on the subject of instrumental music. And I was trying, going back through the old sermons that I have preached about it, and trying to figure out whether I rehash those or spin a different way. I happened across the sermon by a fella named Chris Emerson, and so I thought he had a lot of good points to bring out. And so I listened to his sermon several times over the past couple of weeks, and really the thoughts and some of the quotes that you may hear me say really came from him. But I thought he did such a good job explaining it, and I hope that it will help you as well. The nature of the lesson tonight is really about why we don't use instrumental music in our worship. And I will put the asterisk on here that we're talking about the collective worship. I'm not talking about when you're at home and you're by yourself and whatever way you want to worship God there. That's a completely different discussion. And even in the Old Testament, there were times where God wanted certain things of the collective worship and allowed certain other things in their private life and in their private time. And we bring up, maybe David, when the Ark of the Covenant is coming back in, and David is dancing and twirling, and he's so excited, and he's offering this praise to God. That's not something that he would have done in a collective worship of the children of Israel, but that was something that hit him in that moment. And certainly he embarrassed his wife, and she was utterly horrified by what he was doing. But basically he said, listen, I'm giving praise and honor and glory to God. I don't care what anyone thinks about me in that moment. But that was something on an individual basis versus the collective worship. And so tonight I'm talking about why we do not use instrumental music in our collective worship. And as you've studied, and maybe you can ask Mark if this is the same, would be true for him as well. A lot of times when you're teaching someone and they're coming out of a different religion and they're looking for something new, and you're studying with them and they begin to get comfortable with you, this is the first thing that they ask. All right, what's the deal with no instruments in your church? Right? When they finally get comfortable with you and they start asking questions maybe about why it is that you do what you do, or why it is that our congregation does what we do, almost always one of the first, okay, what's the deal with instruments in worship? Why are you guys so against instrumental music in worship? And while we probably all have, at least those of us who have been here at least for a long time, haven't used instruments of music in worship, there are a lot of other people who do. And I wonder sometimes when that question is asked, okay, so what's the deal with instrumental music? Do we know how to answer that question? Not only to them, but do we know how to defend it for ourselves? Why don't we use instruments of music when so many others do? That's the topic that I'm going to address tonight. I want to remember three things as we discuss this topic. Number one, it's not our job to determine who's saved and who's not. So that's another question that gets asked eventually. Were you saying that I'm going to go to hell because my church uses instruments of worship and your church doesn't, and so that means you're going to have... Oh no. I'm not going to make that determination. That is not my job to tell someone whether they are, going to hell or not for anything. Now, it doesn't mean that I can't warn them, and we'll get into that in just a moment. But it is not our job. We would not be able to do it. I can't even determine myself whether I'm going to have. That's going to be from God. Now, I believe that God has given us everything that we need to have confidence that we are going to heaven someday. But it's not my job to tell someone else where their eternal destination is going to be. The second thing that I want us to remember is that that person is going to appear before God to answer for what they've done. So if they view instrumental music and worship, they're going to have to answer for that. But here's the third thing, so am I. I'm going to have to answer that as well. And I wonder, in answering that question, if someday we're standing at the throne of God on the day of judgment, and God calls Tony to his throne. He says, Tony, I noticed that throughout your time of worship that you never used instruments of worship. Why? Would I be able to answer God's question? We're supposed to be able to make a defense for what we believe, for the hope that is in us. Are we able to answer that question as we stand before the throne of God? Okay, so why didn't you? Because we may not have done that, but not have done it for the wrong reasons. Well, somebody just told me that we shouldn't. I never really thought too much about it after that. Is that what we take to the world when they ask us the question, what's the deal with instrumental music? Why don't you use it? Are we able to answer them that question? Can we answer the hope that is in us with meekness and with fear? So I'm going to try to take this lesson from my own perspective. So here's what I believe. I believe that God authorizes singing, what we just have been doing for the last several minutes. God authorizes singing in congregational worship. However, I also believe that adding instrumental music would be adding something that God has not approved of. Somebody else may have looked at that, as we looked at this morning, and come up with a different conclusion. Say, well, I believe that adding instruments of music is not something that God would be disapproved of. You may believe that. You may see that. But I'm going to tell you why I believe what I believe tonight. Let's start in the Old Testament. I know it seems odd at times to talk about instrumental music and worship in New Testament Christianity and then say, let's go to the Old Testament to start. But I think there's a lot of groundwork that's laid in the Old Testament. How many times have you heard something along the lines of God allowed instrumental music in the Old Testament, so He allows instrumental music in the New Testament? Why would we assume that when He allowed it in the Old Covenant that He wouldn't allow it in the New Covenant? Why would that change happen? Well, let me ask you this question. Would we say that God approves of eating and drinking during worship? Then we just partake of the Lord's Supper. Did we eat? Did we drink? We might say, well, Tony, He didn't exactly authorize eating and drinking, right? There was something more specific to it than that. So, could I then even say, well, God has approved then of eating bread and drinking of juice during our worship? Again, it's more specific than that, isn't it? He has approved the eating of unleavened bread as a part of a remembrance of the Lord and the sacrifice that He made. He has approved the drinking of grape juice, right? The fruit of the vine. But it doesn't go beyond that. When we say something along the lines of God allowed instrumental music in the Old Testament, that's not really true. It was way more specific than instruments. When we say that, we say, well, they used instruments of music in the Old Covenant, so we can use it in the New Covenant. We lose the fact that it's way more specific than that. They could not have just picked up a guitar. They could not have just wheeled in a piano. There were specific things that God told them to play. Specific times that God told them. So when we say, yes, there were instruments used, but we can't just say God authorized instrumental music as a whole, because He didn't. He was way more specific than that. And I want to talk about some of those very specific things for just a little bit. In Exodus chapter 25, Moses begins a list of rules and regulations that basically run from Exodus chapter 25 all the way through the end of Leviticus. It can be daunting to read because it is rule after rule, it is law after law, and he was very specific. In 1 Chronicles chapter 25, we read this. This was supposed to, you're welcome, Steve, because this was going to be my scripture reading, and as I read through it, I'm not doing that to anyone else. Starting in verse 25, or starting in chapter 25 and verse 1. Moreover, David and the commanders of the army set apart for the service some of the sons of Asaph, and of Heman, and of Jethun, who were to prophesy with lyres, harps, and cymbals. Those were the instruments that were approved at this point in time, with lyres, harps, and cymbals. And the number of those who performed their service was, of the sons of Asaph, Zachor, Joseph, Nathael, Asherilah, and the sons of Asaph were under the direction of Asaph, who prophesied under the direction of the king. He goes on through this big long list, which I'm not going to read all of those names, but he goes through this big long list and concludes in verse 6, all these were under the direction of their father to sing to the in the house of the Lord with cymbals, harps, and lyres for the service of the house of God. Asaph, Jeduthun, Heman were under the direction of the king. Their number who were trained in singing to the Lord with their relatives, all who were skillful, was 288. God was very specific about what he wanted. What I want you to gather from this was that this was a message that came from God. It is not something that David made up. This was a message that came from God. God specified the instruments that he wanted to be used, and he specified the people that he wanted to play those instruments of music. And so they were going to have to keep track of all of the sons of these men that are mentioned here. Going to have to keep track, because this is who God wanted in his service to play these instruments. In 1 Chronicles chapter 28, again with David, 1 Chronicles 28 starting in verse 11, then David gave to his son Solomon the plan of the porch of the temple, its buildings, its storehouses, its upper rooms, its inner rooms, and the room for the mercy seat. And the plan of all that he had in mind for the courts of the house of the Lord, for all the surrounding rooms, for the storehouses, for the house of God, and for the storehouses of the dedicated things. Also, for the divisions of priests and the Levites, and all for all the work of the service of the house of the Lord, and for all the utensils of service in the house of the Lord. David is being very specific with his son Solomon, and again, we know that David was the one who wanted to build the temple, but God said, no, you can gather all the stuff, you can make the plans, but you're not going to build it. Your son's going to build it. And so David is passing off to Solomon all of these specific things that God wanted in that worship. Verse 19, all this, said David, the Lord made me understand in writing by his hand upon me. All the details of this pattern, this did not come from David. It was not just David's mind preparing all of these things. This came from God. And David said, this is the way we need to do it, because this is what God told me to do. So we find in 2 Chronicles chapter 7 and verse 6, at the dedication of the temple, the priests stood at their post and the Levites also with the instruments of music to the Lord, which King David had made for the giving of praise to the Lord. What do we know, even though it doesn't say, what do we know those were? Lyres, harps, and cymbals. That's what we know they are because that's what we've already talked about David saying they were. And he said, I'm doing it just exactly as King David laid out for me, which King David had made for giving praise to the Lord, for his loving kindness is everlasting. Whenever he gave praise by their means, while the priests on the other side blew trumpets and all Israel was standing. So now we've introduced on the other side trumpets blowing. But again, all in direction by God. Can we fast forward 400-ish years to the 600 BCs and go to 2 Chronicles chapter 35? 2 Chronicles chapter 35. I want you to notice what happens as they're trying to get back into the proper temple worship that David laid out for them. He says in verse 4, prepare yourselves by your father's households in your divisions according to the writing of David, king of Israel, and according to the writing of his son Solomon. So everything, if you remember, everything that David told us to do, all those things that were written down that David said we needed to do in our worship, that's what we need to do. 400 years have passed. Do you think there are new instruments of music that have been created in 400 years that might be better than the lyre, the harp, the cymbal, or the trumpets? Probably. Go back over the history of our own country 400 years. Can't even really go back that far. And see if there's any instruments of music that have been created in that length of time. You would think, hey, you know, it's been 400 years. God said to do it this way. And so that's the way that we're going to set up. Verse 6, now slaughter the Passover animals, sanctify yourselves and prepare your brethren to do according to the word of the Lord by Moses. Verse 15, the singers, the sons of Asaph. Remember that all the way back in the time of David? That's who was going to be the leaders in their worship. It's still them. It hasn't changed. They didn't say, you know what? It's been 400 years. Your time is up. Let's move on to someone else. No, it's still going to be the sons of Asaph. Asaph has long been gone. But they were also at their stations. According to the commandment of David, Asaph, Heman, Jeduthun, all the same names, the king's seers and the gatekeepers at each gate did not have to depart from their service because the Levites, their brethren, prepared for them. Even 400 years later, nothing has changed about the worship. In 2 Chronicles chapter 29, if you're taking notes, if you mark in your Bible, I would encourage you to mark this, for when someone asks you, what's the deal with the instrumental music? Because this not only lays it out as to who and what's going on, but also the timing of it, when these instruments are going to be used. Notice, starting in verse 25. Now, this is King Hezekiah, again, trying to get everything back the way it's supposed to be, because they've long lost what their collective worship was supposed to be. So he's trying to bring it back. He then stationed the Levites in the house of the Lord with cymbals, with harps, and with... Here we are again. Cymbals, the harps, and the lyres. Why? Why these instruments? So when somebody says God allowed instruments of music in their collective worship in the Old Testament, we can't just say, well, yeah, I guess he did. No. They were very specific instruments that God asked for. It wasn't just a free-for-all of any instrument that you could come up with. And it wasn't that, you know, Mark could come in, I teased him as he walked in today. I said, did you bring your guitar? It wasn't that Mark could say, you know what, I've been working on this song. I would like to come in and play this song. That's not what was going on here. You couldn't just say, hey, I've been practicing this instrument. I can play it now. Let me play it for worship. No, there are specific people who are supposed to be playing these specific instruments. Let's continue. Harps, cymbals, lyres. According to the command of David and of Gad the king's seer and of Nathan the prophet. For the command was from the Lord through his prophets. The Levites stood with the musical instruments of David. What were the musical instruments of David? Lyres, harps. Do we even know what a lyre is? I had to look it up myself. I had no idea what it was, but I do now. It doesn't matter. It was a stringed instrument. But we know what it is. Or we can look it up. We don't use it much anymore. But this is what they are still using. And then we mention again the priest on the other side with the trumpets. Verse 27. Then Hezekiah gave the order to offer the burnt offering on the altar. When the burnt offering began, the song to the Lord also began with the trumpets, accompanied by the instruments of David, which were lyres, harps, and cymbals. While the whole assembly worshiped, the singers also sang, the trumpets sounded, and all of this continued until the burnt offering was finished. At the completion of the burnt offering, the king and all who were present with him bowed down and worshiped. Moreover, King Hezekiah and the officials then ordered the Levites to sing praises to the Lord with the, not the instruments anymore, but with the words of David and of Asaph the seer. So they sang praises with joy and bowed down to worship. What I want us to gain from this, and we'll talk about it later, was that there was a specific starting and stopping point of the instruments of music. When the burnt offering began, it started. When the burnt offering was finished, it stopped. And there was a distinct separation between singing and playing of the instruments. It's going to be important to remember later. Now, a lot of people who are a lot smarter than me suggest that the reason that this was part of their worship, that God instituted it as part of their worship, they're sacrificing animals. Animals that are dying can be loud because they don't want to die. They would be crying out. And so the sound of the trumpets, the lyres, the harps, and the cymbals would cover the screaming of the animals who were dying, being ready to be offered. And so it stopped when that animal was sacrificed. And then they sang praises to God. It makes sense. But let's continue on into the New Testament. And I'll try to go through this part very quickly. What does the word a cappella mean? I think a lot of us would say it means no instruments, right? That's basically, you know, what we've heard growing. A cappella means without instrumentation. And that's not exactly what it means. What the literal translation is in chapel, or more specifically, in the style of the chapel. This is the way you sing when you are in the chapel. Again, it makes sense. Even the word itself is kind of telling us what is happening or how we should have music in our worship. It literally means in chapel or in the style of the chapel. God always has shown us what He wants and then leaves it up to us to do it. 1 Corinthians 14 and verse 15. What is the outcome then? I will pray with the Spirit and I will pray with the mind also. I will sing with the Spirit, and I will sing with the mind also, or sing with the understanding, pray with the understanding. And we're going to connect these two a little bit later on. But he says, I'm going to pray and I'm going to sing with the mind. I'm going to pray and I'm going to sing and I'm going to understand what it is that I'm saying. When we offer up an instrument of music, of worship to God, what is that instrument saying? Nothing. In fact, it can drown out what we are saying at times. And that's not necessarily a reason, it's just something that, again, would make sense. What about the verses? that we read quite often. There's no mention of instrumental music in worship, and that's sometimes people's, you know, well, he didn't really say not to. Well, in by specifying what he does want, he is kind of saying that. So we already looked at Ephesians chapter 5, verses 15 through 21, but verse 19 is what we want to pull out. Speaking to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody with your heart to the Lord. Again, we're speaking to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. Colossians echoes that. Colossians chapter 3. Beyond all these things, in verse 14, put on love, which is the perfect bond of unity. Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which indeed you were called in one body, and be thankful. Let the word of Christ richly dwell within you, with all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another, with psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with thankfulness in your heart to the Lord. What can I teach if I'm playing an instrument? I can teach someone to play an instrument, but there's got to be some talking involved in that, right? Just by playing an instrument, I'm not really teaching anyone anything. But we can do that with our words. We can do that with our voice. And in Hebrews chapter 13, starting in verse 13, it says, "So let us go out to him outside the camp, bearing his reproach. For here we do not have a lasting city, but we are seeking the city which is to come. Through him, then, let us continually offer up a sacrifice of praise to God, that is, the fruit of our lips that give thanks to his name." God has always wanted our service. And we know that when he talks about our lips, he says, if you're going to sing, if you're going to pray, which would be us offering up praise to God, what does he say or how does he say to do it? Pray with the Spirit, or pray with the understanding. Pray or sing with the Spirit, and sing with the mind, or sing with the understanding also. So when he tells us to offer up praise to God with the fruit of our lips, he's not telling us to do it with an instrument of music. And there's a quote that I'll quote later on that makes that make a little bit more sense than I can. Why do you think God would be so specific in the Old Testament, but be okay with a free-for-all in the New Testament? Even if he did allow musical instruments in the New Testament worship, wouldn't he have been just as specific as he was in the Old Testament with what he wanted? It's pretty easy, right? Harps, lyres, cymbals. On the other side, the priests have trumpets. Now, the trumpets, just as a side note, was more for like getting them in order, getting them ready, blasting the trumpet to prepare them so that they could play these other instruments. And they used them in battles, and they used them in a lot of other places, but it was really an alert system that they used because they're very loud. Right? You can make if anybody played the trumpet, you can make a pretty loud sound with that trumpet to ready someone. And so really those three, the harp, the lyre, and the cymbals, were the instruments of music that he allowed in the Old Testament. Why wouldn't he have been that specific in the New Testament as well? Some quotes from some church leaders of modern history, and you may recognize the denominations that these men are attached to, but I think this is probably the least important point, but I do think that it's important to understand where these men were on instrumental music and understand where some of the denominations have gone over the years. John Calvin said, "Musical instruments in celebrating the praise of God would be no more suitable than the burning of incense, the lighting of lamps, and the restoration of the other shadows of the law." He said it was something that belonged in the old law. Why would we bring any of it back? Martin Luther said the organ in worship is the insignia of Baal. Pretty strong words. Basically, it has the signature of idol worship all over it. John Wesley said, "I have no objection to instruments of music and worship, provided they are neither seen nor heard." They can be in the back, I guess, there somewhere. As long as we don't see them, as long as we don't hear them, that would be fine. Adam Clark, which has big long commentaries that you can go up and read. So it's going to be hard to read this from where you're sitting. But he said this, "I am an old man, and I here declare that I never knew them," speaking of instrumental music, "to be productive of any good in the worship of God, and have no reason to believe that they are a product of much evil. Much as a science, I esteem and admire, but instrumental music in the house of God I abominate and abhor. This is the abuse of music. And here register my protest against all such corruption of the worship of the author of Christianity. The late and venerable and most eminent divine, the Reverend John Wesley," which we wouldn't call him that, but that's what he says, "who was a lover of music, an elegant poet, when he asked his opinion of instruments of music being introduced into the chapels of the Methodists, said in his terse, powerful manner," and then he re-quotes, "I have no objection to instruments of music in our chapels, provided they are neither heard nor seen." Then he concludes, "I say the same." Maybe the most recent of all of these is Charles Spurgeon, who, it says in the parentheses here, he preached to 20,000 people every Sunday for 20 years in the Metropolitan Baptist Cemetery, and there was never instruments of music in his services. Notice what he says. Remember the connection between praying and singing with the understanding? He says, "We might as well pray by machinery as praise by it." When asked why, he quoted 1 Corinthians 14:15. "I will pray with the Spirit, and I will pray with the understanding also. I will sing with the Spirit, I will sing with the understanding also." Then he declared, "I would as soon pray to God with machinery as to sing to God with machinery." Some powerful quotes from early church leaders. And we're talking, 1800s here. These men said it has no business being in worship. And a lot of these that these men, preached for those denominations, a lot of them have been overcome with instruments of music over those couple hundred years. But it wasn't meant to be that way. When we look at the Jews, now when they came back from captivity, that's when the idea for the synagogue really came into play. And so everywhere that the Jews were, there wasn't a lot of temple worship. They couldn't get there as much maybe as they used to, because they were dispersed and spread out. So everywhere they went, they started these synagogues. There were no instruments of music there. Now, starting around 1957, there was some big changes in the Jewish culture, in the Jewish religion. And a few of them you might see have instruments of music now. But from the time the synagogues started, all the way back to the Babylonian captivity, all the way to 1957, there were no instruments of music in their synagogue worship. Why? Because it was all tied to the temple. It was all tied to the burnt offerings, to the sacrifice. And so they had no authority to do that, but they did have the ability and the authority to sing. And so as we move into the New Testament, there would really be no reason for Jesus to say, stop using instruments of in your worship, when they weren't currently doing that anyway, at least not outside the temple. And so a lot of people say, well, then why didn't Jesus tell them to stop? Well, there was no reason to tell them to stop, because they weren't doing it. In Christianity, not in the first century, the second century, the third century, the fourth century, the fifth century, all the way to the sixth century AD, there's no record at all of any instruments of music. Then about 600 years after Christianity began, it began to be inserted little by little until we get to where we are now. where people say, everybody does it. But I don't believe that that was the pattern that God offered from the very beginning. We read a verse that we read this morning in Matthew chapter 28, where Jesus says, "All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth." Then he says, "Go, make disciples, teach." And I think that's what this is all about. Teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. Jesus has all authority. Our preferences do not matter. I like instruments of music. There's nothing more beautiful to me than somebody who knows how to play a piano. I wish I could play a piano. I think it's got one of the most beautiful sounds. I love to sit and listen to music. In fact, I'm drawn a lot of times when a song is being played, not to the lyrics of the song, but to the music, the melody that the musicians are playing. I'm drawn to that. I think it's beautiful. I think it covers bad singers, which I think is a lot of why sometimes people use it. We don't sing that well, so let's play this instrument that's mechanical and is going to cover up all of our mistakes and help keep us, maybe on key and on track. But my preferences don't matter. What God wants, God should get. So we ask the question in close, why wouldn't God want instruments of music and worship? Can we go back to the verse that I told you to mark? In 2 Chronicles chapter 29, we won't necessarily take the time to read the whole thing, but again, we see a distinct start and a distinct stop. 28, while the whole assembly worshiped, the singers also sang, the trumpets sounded, all of this continued until the burnt offering was finished. At the completion of the burnt offering, the king and all who were present bowed down and worshiped, so no more instruments are going on. Moreover, King Hezekiah and the official ordered the Levites to sing. Now, he has just told them to sing and to play in those previous verses, but now he's just telling them to sing because the burnt offering is now over. So when we ask the question, why wouldn't God want instruments of music and worship? To me, it makes sense. If instruments of music were tied to the sacrificial system, when this animal was being sacrificed, why would we want to go back to a time without Jesus? Why would God want us to go back to a time that these instruments were played during the animal sacrifice? We have our sacrifice. It was Jesus. We don't need that part of that worship anymore. Now we can sing those songs of praise that he mentions in 29 and 30. So they sang praises with joy and bowed down and worshiped. We could teach one another psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. We can sing and make melody in our heart to the Lord. To me, it makes sense that he wouldn't want it if it was tied to the sacrificial system, which is what 2 Chronicles 29 verses 25 through 30 suggests. Let's leave it there. Why would we want to go back to this time without Jesus? So I ask that same question of us tonight. Do you have Jesus? That's my tie-in for the invitation. We don't want to be at a time where we don't have Jesus. If you need Jesus tonight, we talked about Matthew chapter 28, verses 18 through 20. It says, "All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go, therefore, make disciples of all nations." How do we do that, Lord? Baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. Well, then what do? Then teach them to observe all that I've commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. If you're here and not a child of God, you can become one tonight. We'll baptize you in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, just as Jesus said, and we'll make you a disciple of Christ. If you are already a disciple of Christ, But yet you within your life have gone back to a time that, again, this goes beyond instruments of music and worship. But you've gone back to a time where Jesus wasn't in your life. You've gone back into the world of sin. There's time and opportunity to make that right with your God tonight. If you're here and subject to God's invitation in any way, won't you please come and have a front seat while we stand and while we sing?